Dr. Bill Gibbons, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, appreciate the opportunity to inform some of your listeners about a very exciting new activity we've been working on here.
Thanks. And I want to just start by asking, I'm curious where we're at currently in any efforts to see oil seeds grown and used in South Dakota, to see any value-added use in South Dakota. Is there a timeline for if, when we could see this grown as a viable crop and in a separate industry in the state?
Yeah, what we've been working on for the past 3 years with a consortium of companies that really represent the full value chain of these alternative non-food oilseed crops. And it's been funded, of course, by the South Dakota legislature for the past 3 years, now going on 4 years, and we've also had very strong support from the South Dakota Oilseed Commission. So the focus of this project, it's beyond sunflowers and soybeans and some of the traditional oilseed crops. What we're focusing on are non-food oilseed crops that have oils specifically designed, if you will, or that have desirable characteristics for producing biofuels. And, of course, a co-product of that will be a high-protein meal that will be valuable for livestock production. And so we're, working through agronomy questions about how you would consolidate production, scale up production, where the oil seeds would be processed, who would process them, where we actually produce the crops to begin with, where we would use the meal. So we're at a stage now really producing, under 1,000 acres of these crops this year in South Dakota. Our neighboring states, North Dakota and Montana, are probably in the range of 6 to maybe 10,000 acres. So starting up there and moving south, we envision within, maybe 5 years that this 3-4-state region with Wyoming, maybe branching down into Nebraska, Kansas, Colorado, could be producing, a 250,000 acres of these oilseed crops each year, targeted towards a wheat rotation. So we're looking at the more arid portions of this area, the western Dakotas, eastern Montana, Wyoming, in providing another opportunity, another crop for farmers to grow in that region, a crop that's very well suited due to its heat tolerance and its resistance to drought, or ability to survive drought, low moisture conditions.
And you may have just mentioned it again, but can you reiterate what exactly are the best plants for growing these kind of oilseed crops?
Well, the ones that we're focused on right now primarily are Ethiopian mustard, which goes by the name of Carinata, and we have a partner in a company called Agrosoma Biosciences out of Canada that's been leading the way in developing varieties of that crop. And another one is Camelina, which some of your listeners might have heard of. It's been grown in Montana for a few years, kind of had its ups and downs a little bit. And so we're working with some companies that are developing varieties of that crop as well. They both have similar tolerance to low moisture conditions. Camelina tends to grow a little bit better in slightly cooler conditions, looking at as maybe a winter crop, a substitute for winter wheat, for example. Carinata can really take fairly warm summer conditions, so we're looking at that, maybe as a rotational crop in a spring wheat type system where you would plant it in May, harvest it sometime September, maybe even late August.
And then most of us have heard that, that there are some diesel engines and you can convert your diesel engine to run on vegetable oil, say used French fry grease or something. And I'm assuming that these oil seeds are sort of the same thing, but what is the processing to convert, say, the seeds into a usable fuel, like that would be similar to a diesel fuel, I assume?
Well, that's a great question. And actually, one of the real recent developments that we've been working on with some collaborators down at Colorado State University is a technology that they developed where you would mix E85 gasoline, that is gasoline mixed with 10% ethanol. If you mix that, about 10% of that, with straight vegetable oil, it can be used directly in diesel engines without having to go through the biodiesel conversion process, which is relatively simple, but it's beyond the scope of most on-farm scale production. And so the Colorado people, in fact, just recently published a paper where they looked at biodiesel, regular diesel, and this mixture of E85 and vegetable oil together, and found really good performance, excellent characteristics in terms of winter, temperature operation and so forth with this mixture. And so that's something that it looks like could be done really easily on a farm scale basis. It's basically a tank with a little bit of agitation, and then you mix the two components together, can use it straight in diesel engines without any modification. Now, of course, a larger market for that oil exists in biodiesel plants, which we have an abundance of throughout the Midwest. And so right now, a lot of those plants are using sunflower oil, but these other oils would fit in. But the real high-value market for these non-food vegetable oils is production of jet fuel. And the reason is jet fuel is a mixture of of hydrocarbons of 9 to, say, 11 or 12 carbons in length. And when you go through a process of the vegetable oil to produce the jet fuel, you basically split the long carbon chain in half. And these long chain non-food vegetable oils are long enough carbons. They have 22, 23 carbons in them. When you split them in half, you then end up with these long chain molecules, two of these long chain molecules. So unlike soybean oil that has some of the C16 to C18 oils in it, where you'd get one 11 molecule jet fuel out of one of those vegetable oils and the rest are shorter chains, with these longer chain carinata camelina oils, you get two fuel molecules for every one molecule of oil. So that's the real advantage. It just happens to, you split it in half, you get two molecules instead of one and a bunch of short chain molecules.
So that makes me curious if it's sort of a bio jet fuel, is that less polluting than normal jet fuel? Is there less pollution from that in the sky?
Yeah, well, the technology technologies to do that conversion are already known. We're working with a company called Applied Research Associates out of Panama City, Florida, really, of all places. But they've developed a thermal hydrotreating process that will do that splitting of the long-chain oil, hydrogenate the oil, and make molecules that are identical to the petroleum products. And so they've been going through testing with the Department of Defense, especially the Department of Navy on Air Force and Air Force in terms of certifying those fuels. They're working with commercial airlines on these biofuel-based fuels to make sure they perform adequately. They're actually finding that they burn a little bit cleaner for whatever reason. So the pollution's down. They get a little bit better performance in the engines. Even some anecdotal evidence that they're seeing a little less wear in the engines. And so everything looks really positive. And so for that reason, the Department of Defense now is subcontracting out to some of these companies to actually buy these fuels in large quantities. So they're contracting out 80 to 100 million gallons of fuel purchases so they can use that as part of their ramp over to a green production of fuels, whether it's diesel or jet fuel.
Now, some of the critics of other sources of biofuel have pointed out that they have a large carbon footprint because you need to use for fossil fuels to get them. And when you look at the whole cycle or the life of some of these biofuels, the carbon footprint or the pollution ends up being more in the long run. Where does that balance out when it comes to oil seeds? How does the carbon footprint come out when compared to fossil fuels or even to corn ethanol?
Yep, that's another great question. Actually, in your neighborhood, we've got two scientists at the School of Mines and Technology, Jim Stone and Heidi Sieverding, that are leading the work on the life cycle analysis for us. And so they have a model established. They're using basically all the accepted protocols for establishing this model of what the carbon footprint will look like. And, of course, they're looking at other things beyond that. in terms of water usage and where you locate plants and the logistics and the whole nine yards. Preliminary data looks very promising compared to petroleum-based fuels and, ethanol and other types of fuels. The inputs for these crops are pretty low. The big questions that they're still looking to answer is they're gathering information on the production of the seed and agronomy through the work that we're doing here at SDSU. And then on the downstream side, they're working with companies like ARA, as I mentioned, on the fuel processing side, to look at the carbon footprint of their processes. So I can't give you a final answer today, unfortunately. Preliminarily, though, they say things are looking very positive in all the boxes that they're checking off. And hopefully by the end of this year, we get another year of crop production, another year of conversion of these oils into fuels. We'll have a lot firmer handle on what that carbon footprint's going to look like, because we want to make sure we're out front with this. One of the challenges, of course, that the ethanol industry had is a lot of that work hadn't been done, and you had naysayers, people coming out with studies refuting it. A lot of those studies were using 10, 15, 20-year-old information on corn ethanol production that wasn't valid anymore. And so we want to make sure with this technology, as we're developing it, as we develop the technology, we're tracking the carbon, we're tracking the economics, all the other impacts that we potentially have on society as we're doing the research.
You mentioned earlier that these crops, oilseed crops, can be used in rotation with wheat, and that's good for farmers to have another possible cash crop to use, in their toolbox if they choose to plant this. But what does this mean in the long term for the South Dakota ag industry? Is this potentially another crop that could be used and could boost agriculture in the state?
Yeah, that's one of the fundamental reasons that we actually got involved in this work. The Department of Navy, of course, came to us, and they're interested in diversifying their fuel resources, and they're looking across the entire country, in fact, the entire globe. They don't want to be hostage to petroleum as their only source of fuel. And so that was really the starting point, but then we got to looking at South Dakota and how South Dakota could play a role in providing these renewable jet and diesel fuels and even gasoline. And, of course, one of the sources of oil that we already have is oil coming out of corn ethanol plants that's being recovered. So that's probably the first lowest-hanging fruit. But then we look at West River, South Dakota, in wheat country. And in wheat country, because of the climate and the growing season and especially the lack of moisture, the limited amount of moisture, there's limited rotational opportunities with wheat. A lot of producers in the past have went with a wheat fallow system or a continuous wheat system, and there's some, of course, sunflower rotations in with wheat or other pulse crops or grain sorghum, but really the options are kind of limited. And so we took a look at these oil seeds. They're perfectly adapted for that type of climate, because that's where they come from in countries overseas, similar types of climate. So we thought this would be a perfect crop to look at for production agriculture. And then the other benefit to it is the meal that comes out, because, of course, West River, South Dakota, and, in the Montana and Wyoming cattle country, if they need high-protein supplements, they're hauling distillers grain from the eastern corn or the western corn belt, eastern South Dakota west, or they're hauling soybean meal. These meals might provide a very high-protein substrate that they would have right in that location. So in a real big picture, we look at this oil seed, non-food oil seed, producing jet fuel, diesel fuel, high-protein feed, as western South Dakota's potential equivalent to what corn ethanol has been in the eastern part of the state. And, of course, that's been a tremendous boon to agriculture in eastern South Dakota. And we think the similar thing could happen with these oil seeds western South Dakota.
Well, Dr. Gibbons, I want to thank you for your time. We're just about out of time, but I want to ask one quick final question. What is the timeline for when we could see more of this kind of these crops be implemented, and when your research could have some better answers on the best practices and best ways forward?
Well, we're learning every year, as I said. Research is always and it will continue even after the industry gets developed. But within the next 3 to 5 years, the companies that we're working with have a very aggressive timeline to ramp up acreage. And I mentioned, you know, within, you know, 3-4 years from now, they're looking at wanting to have 200, 250, 300,000 acres of these crops grown in this western upper plains region. And at some point, that production, instead of all being shipped to existing crushing facilities farther east and then used in biodiesel production, you get enough production in a location, then you can look at investing in a processing facility dedicated to that production. And so I could see that happening, you know, in 4 or 5 years from now. So it's a few years away, but producers, if they're interested, they can certainly contact me at SDSU. Gibbons, G-I-B-B-O-N-S is my name, William Gibbons, and we've got a lot of agronomy people that are interested in working with producers on trying these crops out.
Well, Dr. William Gibbons, a professor at SDSU, specializing in industrial microbiology, I want to thank you again for your time today. Thanks for joining the show.
You're welcome.